You may not know tonight's movie, but chances are you've seen the films that it inspired. Tonight, we are revisiting Orson Welles' noir classic, the movie behind one of cinema's most iconic finales, The Lady from Shanghai.
You, no trouble. Me, fifth element. Supreme being.
You will be a weapon. You will be a minister of death, praying for war. But until that day, you are cute. Sound off like you got a pair.
Sir, yes, sir!
Ah, yes! I was wondering what would break first. Your spirit or your money?
You get nothing. You lose. Good day, sir.
God is dead.
The city is headed for a disaster of biblical proportion.
What do you mean, biblical?
What he means is Old Testament,
yes.
Mr. Mayor. Real wrath of God type stuff.
Dead
fire and brimstone coming down from the skies. Rivers and seas boiling.
40 years of darkness, earthquakes, volcanoes.
The dead rising from the grave.
Human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together. Mass hysteria.
Welcome to the podcast, Movie Crew Podcast, Movie Makers Talking Movies. We're your host. I'm Director of Photography, Jared Callen. With me here tonight, Editor Brian Elkins.
What? Oh, sorry. I couldn't hear you, Jared. I was doing a little target practice.
Oh, yes, target. I was hoping to do my target practice. Also with us tonight, costume designer Kristen Jones.
Hello.
Hey. How's it going, guys?
It's good. No Irish accents off the top.
I did target practice, yeah.
Well, that guy wasn't Irish. I don't know what the hell was wrong with that dude.
I think he was making fun of him. Was he not?
Was he? Was that what it is?
Or was he giving him instructions to sound like that so he could possibly sound drunk?
See, I think he was like drunk some of the movie, and then other times I was like, does he have a speech impediment on certain words?
I'm not talking about that guy. I'm talking about the other people that he's around, because he's supposed to deliver this line. So he's giving him the delivery. And people, when he runs off, they say, oh, damn, what's wrong with him? Is he drunk? And the guy goes like, yeah, he's fucking soused, you know. So maybe that was the delivery to make people think that he's drunk.
No,
or are you just drunk if you're like running around with a gun?
Well, he also said corpse weird in that same thing. he said all of his whole monologue in the car there. He's saying words weird.
Yeah. I was wondering if it was some sort of like the mid-Atlantic accent?
If it was, it was definitely like the sauced up version.
I mean, yeah, the sauced up version.
Oh, but sometimes he's just absolutely trashed. Actually, the first half of the film, every time you see him, he's just gone.
Yeah, even when he says, like, oh, I haven't been drinking, I'm like, oh, I don't believe that. It sounds like you've been drinking to me.
I don't believe you, sir.
What do you sound like sober? I need a baseline here. I don't know what the fuck is going on.
I don't know. I just know that I don't trust you, bro.
Please, for God's sakes, keep your liquids in your mouth. You're just like, every time he's like drinking a beer or something and he's like talking, it's just like, ugh.
This whole movie is a little bit like an episode of Ren and Stimpy. Like, the closer we get with the camera, like, you really see, like, the grossness of everyone. Because, like, we cut in and they're just, like, dripping with sweat. It's like, holy fuck.
Yeah. Which is crazy, too, because those scenes look like those are the studio shots.
They're spraying them down before. Like, I think they're doing that shit on purpose.
Yeah, but it's like the stuff where they're on location, they don't look that sweaty.
Yeah.
Do we not have the makeup or spritzer there? Like, what's going on?
Well, the lights are really hot inside the studio. They're using those giant arc lights and shit.
I mean, damn. You would think fucking Mexico and South America would also be hot as shit.
Yeah. I saw one shot at the beginning when he's, like, fighting, like, you know, 10 dudes all at the same time, and they like speed it up like Steven Seagal. Did you notice that? Like, they only did it once where he like he punches this guy and they sped it up. And I was like, holy fuck.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Yeah, and I was really disappointed that they didn't continue that style. They only did it for like one shot.
No. It's they use it and when he's trying to escape the courtroom.
They do speed up there.
Yeah, yeah. There's a bunch actually there. They even like do some jump cuts where they like he's throwing the bookcase on one guy and they'll cut some frames out, I guess for safety reasons. But yeah.
Oh, you're saying they spliced something together? They got the guy out of there and then dropped
it. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, there are also like just crazy jump cuts where they're just cutting shit out of the into the out of sections of this, I guess, to speed things up. Like even the very end of the movie when Orson Welles walks out of the crazy house and he's going through the little spindle gate exit, you know?
Yeah.
So that thing's like turning, and then like I guess Rita Hayworth wasn't falling fast enough and they just cut it and the spindle just stops. And it's like, what? Why did we do that? Why didn't we just fade out of that scene right there? But, you know, it's back in the 40s, and they're like, ah, fucking audience members. They don't want to know what they're looking at. They're idiots.
It's good enough. Move on.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of fair, I think.
I guess for the 40s. It is insane, though, because we've been watching all these Orson Welles movies, and they're so, like, carefully, meticulously put together. And you do get to this one, and it's kind of a slop fest.
But that's not Orson Welles' fault.
Is it not?
Well, but he shot it, and then when he delivered it, they were like, no, we don't like this. We're going to have someone else go reshoot it. And so I wouldn't put that on him.
Did they do reshoots? I know that they cut like over an hour out of his edit.
Yeah, they did a ton of reshoots, and that's where all the close-ups are, all the reshoots. And that's also why they went so over budget on this. None of that had to do with Orson Welles.
He wasn't there for those shoots?
No, I think he was there for those.
He was just standing over there pissed. He's like, I don't like this lens.
I think that's what he was doing, yes.
Yeah, he was there for the shoot. He was the reshoots. I don't think he was there for any of the editing.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I think Columbia took the movie from him.
Well, that explains a lot, you know. I need to go back and watch it now, knowing that they cut so much. I found that out after, you know. I'd like to go and kind of analyze and see where if you feel like, you know, we're... Like you said, you can tell when they're hurrying the scene along. I didn't necessarily notice that. I just thought it was a little weird.
Oh, yeah, no, There are moments where they're doing transitions where they're like, look here, this character's leaving here. Oh, moving on. And you can see character's mouth moving, and you're like, what the fuck?
I just instantly thought the entire film is like, you know, 90% ADR. Like from the jump, I was like, oh, this fucking film is this. It actually kind of, I had to restart it and kind of reset my brain because I was like, all right, this is what we're going to deal with here.
I don't think I don't think the ADR is worse than any of the other movies we've watched.
I don't know. It just seemed a lot more evident in this one for me.
Because of the VO?
I guess so. I don't know. Or maybe it's just the accent.
Which, okay, I will agree. It is distracting, but it's not really that terrible of an Irish accent.
No, he actually, he lands it. Every now and then you're like, all right, that's good, you know?
But is it just because we all know Orson Welles' voice so well? He's got such a booming voice?
He still does his voice, though. Like he's kind of like dipping in and out of it at times. Like, every now and then he lands his Orson Welles voice.
Yeah, it's not terrible, but it is like, I don't know, it is distracting, I guess, is the thing. Not a bad exit, but distracting.
I mean, it's bad in some places.
Is it bad in some places? I don't know.
It made me think, like, what do actual Irish people think of this? You know, because we can tell he's putting an accent on, but you know, they're like, holy fuck, bro.
They're like, perfect, nailed it.
They're like, you know, Kevin Costner trying to do, you know, a British accent. They're just like, oh.
When did that happen?
Yeah.
you talking about Robin Hood?
The first two scenes in Robin Hood, and then it changes.
It still sounds Americanese to me.
Yeah. Is there a reason why you chose this one out of all the films? Is this the noir one to watch?
Well, this is really his only early noir. The only other one he did that you can put in a film noir category really is Touch of Evil. But that's just so much later. And that's like, this was kind of like his last studio film that he did in this run. And he went back and did Touch of Evil for a studio. And then he said, fuck Hollywood at that point. So this is kind of the end of an era. And this is also the one where Orson Welles is, you know, to quote the movie, he's kind of the tough guy. He is a hero. He never, ever played any kind of role like this ever again. You know, this is the only one where even in this movie, he's kind of an idiot. He's a dumb, stupid seaman. But he's got all the leading man qualities here. He's just kind of dumb.
I mean, it's a pretty boring character.
Yeah.
Like if I were picking someone to choose to play from this, you know. I don't know that I would want the leading man role. It seems, out of everyone, quite dull. Yeah, he is dumb. He's just going along, and he's just a bit in love with the main character, with Elsa, and that's not really thinking.
Yeah, exactly. You said it right there. He's going along. It just seems like he's just like, all right.
Wait, yeah, he's just like showing up.
All right, we'll take it. We'll take the job. That's great. This sounds awesome. Cool. Oh, you want me to kill you, but not kill you? All right. Cool, man. Yeah, this sounds awesome. Let's get it going. Like, if you watch Fletch, how he reacts is very similar. He's kind of like, okay. But like, at least you get a little bit of his eyes. I don't know if you've seen Fletch. Very similar, at least starting plot. He handles it better. This guy's, he's just completely blank.
Well, actually, that's interesting. Would it be a more interesting character if it was acted differently?
I don't know. I don't think there really is that much here. I mean, I don't know. Is there really anything for the main character, the good hero, or the if it's not like Double Indemnity, you know, where it's more of an anti-hero or the character that gets themselves in the wrong? This guy, he gets himself in a bad spot, but he's not really doing anything evil per se. He's not committing murder in this movie. You know, he's just kind of the good guy. Like, is the good guy in a film noir ever really the interesting one?
Well, no. Well, but I mean, you could make it interesting perhaps because he's torn. Like, maybe he's in love with her, but his conscience is weighing on him. Maybe he, yeah, like there's, you could introduce tension, I think, into the character that, and there isn't any because he just goes along with whatever anyone tells him. I mean, at some point he's like, oh, I think I'm going to leave. And I'm like, really? No, and then he's like, yeah, never mind. And I'm like, okay.
Of course, you never really know. But, you know, the guy's like, you know, oh, you know, he's threatening to quit. He's threatening to quit, you know, but he never will. You know, Michael wants to quit. He just can't commit to that.
I mean, he even at some point says, you know, he wants to run off with Elsa. And it's like, do you, though? I feel maybe this is a fault of the acting. Can you make a good boring character more interesting? But we don't know that he's a good character. I mean, it starts off by saying that he murdered someone, yeah. You know, so
a Franco
that could
spy
also
come
make
on
it interesting. I feel like he's just not interesting at all. Like, when you hear that he murdered someone, you're just like, oh cool, that's nice.
Well, that goes, that sets it up that he is capable of doing such things, but because then he doesn't, you know, then that is the quandary. And then you find out that he actually, it was murder for country. So that's kind of like, you know, if you go off to war and you kill someone, are you now a murderer?
Sure. Yes, this is true. But I'm just saying, at no point do you think he's dangerous. At no point do you think he's evil. At no point. I don't know. I, even when you just find out that he like at the beginning when he's like, oh, I'm a murderer, you're just like, okay. Like, it just seems like a story he's saying to impress her. Or, like, it seems like an accidental murder. Like, if it had come up that, you know, he watched some guy, like, somebody choked and he would just happen to be there, you're like, okay, so it's not really the same thing. Just like, again, when you're in the war, it's not really, is this really the same thing?
Didn't he smack her in one scene?
Yep.
Like
which she like, tried to kiss him.
Yeah, a light little tap, right? Yeah. I think that scene kind of that's another one of those moments where you're like, oh, you know, this guy's it shocks her as well. She's like, oh shit, I wasn't expecting that from you, you know. And so they do little things like that to show you that he could be capable of doing things if he has to.
Well, I think they're doing that just because, like, I don't know, you're constantly like, oh, he's gonna kill somebody, she's getting him to kill somebody, and you keep thinking that's exactly where the movie's gonna go. And I do like the film doesn't go there. They're like, you know, fuck that. That's not what we're doing. That's not the story we're telling. It does kind of set you up, pull the rug out from under you. I like that.
Yeah. I mean, the total build to what you think is going to happen and then the turn at the end, it's all very satisfying. With as kind of lackluster as this film kind of is, you know, and also knowing with doing a little research on the back end that Orson Welles was only doing this to get money to finish another film. So he's like, you know,
finish a play. He was.
Oh, was it a play?
It was a play. It was around. He was doing a stage play of Jules Verne's Around the World in 80 Days.
What the fuck?
I know, right? Go figure that one out.
Look,
How would you?
I've got to finish this play.
Well, his producer backed out on him, and he had all these costume rentals. He needed like fucking $50,000 or something like that. And I was like, what the hell? For his costumes. Otherwise, they were going to take his wardrobe.
So how long did it take to make this movie? They're like, all right, we'll do this play in like, you know, a year.
Well, no, he got a... That's where the title and everything came from. William, this was another producer's story. William Castle, the producer that made House on Haunted Hill and 13 Ghosts, he had the rights to this book that this was based off of. And Orson Welles somehow knew he had those rights, but he had never read this book. And he was just talking to the head of Columbia. I forgot the dude's name at the time. And he was like, hey, look, if you give me an advance right now, I can make this great picture for you. And he sold him on some other movie. And the guy was like, oh, what's the title? What is this movie? And he just happened to look over and some fucking girl was reading some book. And apparently the title was The Lady from Shanghai, which I have also heard is bullshit as well. But the title of this movie doesn't even make sense. So I guess
it makes zero sense.
I guess Orson Welles was trying to make that also make sense. But you go back and read Orson Welles' interviews, and he sounds kind of like William Friedkin. Like, he's just lying through his teeth half the time, and you don't really know, is this truth or not?
It's just so random. You know, like, you have this title, and then Rita Hayworth can speak Chinese, and there are Asian characters in this, but none of that makes any sense in the story, and it has no basis on anything. Yeah.
That's 100% true.
Very weird.
She just has, like, I guess she has Asian help when she's in San Francisco.
Bro.
And
makes one call and motherfuckers come out of the woodwork.
Yeah.
And make shit happen for her. Yeah.
They'll just kidnap people. They're like, oh, yeah. Rita Hayworth needs it. Sure.
Dude, she is tied into the fucking underground there. Like, there's this whole, like, subculture, like, thing that's happening. And for some reason, that's a really interesting thing of her character. We just don't really develop it at all.
Yeah, but it's so weird because these Asian guys, they don't look like they're, like, criminal masterminds or anything. They're, like, old men.
No, that's what I'm saying. It's kind of like the John Wick world. It's just everywhere there, right? Like, everyone's in on it. This is just everyday life.
I think it's just those four dudes that were in on it. It's these four random dudes that are, like, sitting in this hotel room, or maybe that's their apartment.
That just
I don't know.
It feel like it was the entire, you know, it was the community. Everyone just knows. It was very surreal and very weird.
Oh, well, that's when the cops came in, and, like, when they were doing the play, and everyone's just like, what the fuck are these cops doing?
That was also so weird, because the music and just the timing of all that, it was awkward and, very interesting.
But, yeah, that whole Asian playhouse, I've seen that scene ripped off so many times in so many different movies. Like, we got to go in and find the person, and it's like, oh, the cops are after me. I'm going to duck into this theater, and here, quick, kiss me. Oh, look at that. They're not going to know it's me because we're kissing. Oh.
Yeah, like, we're just awkwardly hugging, basically, just holding this position. You know, that's not obvious. But you're right about, like, references and people just ripping things off from Orson Welles. We see it a lot, actually. Like I said, I just watched Fletch, like, 3 weeks ago. And I watched this and was like, holy shit. It's pretty much the same, like, same setup. Very, very cool.
Oh, we just watched The Shadow, and they took the end directly from this movie.
Yeah.
With the Hall of Mirrors and everything.
And this one was actually really cool. I like the way they did the Hall of Mirrors here. It was very, very cool.
Really, really stylized. I was actually going through and trying to figure out, like, which one of these shots is real, which one of these is mats, which one of these...
I think they're not. I think they're all just cut together mats, are they not?
No, some of them are actually just mirror shots, and then some of them are, like, they're using still frames from people to get it through. Sometimes they're superimposing the images. Sometimes there's this one real cool one where they're tracking along the series of mirrors, and the camera stops, and then Rita Hayworth, her reflection just appears in the middle of one, and it's just like, what the fuck? And when the first time you watch the movie, you just go with it. But if you go through and actually study it shot by shot, it's like, that is bizarre.
It's very weird. But what's interesting about that is if Orson Welles didn't actually edit it, you know, wasn't in the editing room, are they working off of his notes on how he shot this, or was that just something that was created?
No, because wasn't his original scene 20 minutes long and they cut it down?
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
So there were whole other set pieces in that we never saw.
I think so, yeah.
Wow.
And I, of course, tried to see if I could find it.
Let's say release the Wells cut.
No, but I think it's, they claim at least that they don't have the original footage anymore.
Yeah, they used to just burn shit or throw it in the ocean. They, it's just like, you know, it's done.
Yeah, they did not keep crap.
That guy, you know.
Boy genius, ha! Watch this film burn, boy genius. Who's got the last laugh now, bastard?
Who's digging holes to put cameras in now, huh? Dig up your footage somewhere.
Fucking dig a hole in my fucking soundstage, you bitch. Oh, I can see it now. Oh, yeah, you know they were petty.
Oh, no doubt. Did he actually do his Around the World in 80 Days production?
Yeah. He did do that play.
Did it win? Did he get Tonys and shit? Was it awesome?
Oh, I have no idea. I did not look that up, man.
Okay, yeah. All right.
it just sounded so bad. I didn't even want to see stills of it. I was like, how do you do Around the World in 80 Days on the
stage? I want to see the hot air balloon like contraption that he has, you know?
You know that would be terrible.
Well, you know, no, hold on. Because if he had 50 cages for the costumes, you know he had something very cool going on.
Bro, it was
on.
The Spider-Man of its day. Yeah. The motherfuckers were dying and shit, like while he was filming this, or like, you know, prepping this thing for the stage.
Oh.
He's like, I want this hot air balloon to travel over the crowd and land on the stage.
All right, now that would be cool, but you know they didn't do that shit.
They would do it today. They would figure it out.
Yeah,
if we can fly in Taylor Swift, we can fly in a hot balloon. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no. Nowadays, if somebody was doing that, I would actually be interested in go watching it. But back in the 40s, I'd be like, no, fuck that.
Oh, here it says the 1946 stage musical was an ambitious, expensive theatrical extravaganza that mixed live action with filmed sequences.
Oh,
very cool.
I think it would have been cool. I would go.
You said 46. Interesting, because so he was doing that like. That came out. They finished that before this film ever came out. Didn't this come out?
Well, he did 75 performances. So I don't know how long it ran, like how many years it ran, but
that's cool.
Potentially a while. And then he did a television documentary series that was 6 25-minute documentary episodes where he visited different places in Europe. So not quite around the world.
That was another cash grab to try to, you know, put back into the theatrical production.
So he only went to six spots in Europe?
Yeah.
He's like, that's around the world. We're done.
We did it. Yeah.
That's good enough.
He probably like figured out exactly how many shows and tickets he had to sell to recoup his money with enough profit. And he's like, all right, we're good. We did it. Move on to the next thing.
Oh, here. All right. So yeah, it was all of it was this is for the play. We're going back to the play. It was all in 1946. It opened May 31st and closed August 3rd. So that's a really short run.
That is.
There were 38 sets, which is a lot.
What year is
some
that?
Of the more 46.
46.
Some of the more spectacular scenes included a giant eagle snatching an actor from the stage, an authentic Japanese circus troupe, a live elephant, a train crossing the Rocky Mountains, and a troop of Marines. Motion picture footage was shot and integrated into the play to heighten its mad vaudevillian qualities.
The fucking actual elephant on stage, that would probably be pretty cool.
Hell yeah.
Like, if you saw that in 46, that would probably blow your mind. You'd be like, what the fuck? It's the zoo is here, bitch! Oh my god!
Alright, this is a quote. It says, the audience felt blessed.
Oh wow.
It was a spellbinding night.
Well, you know what? Fuck it, man. Yeah, this film was worth that, you know? That's cool.
But he lost an estimated $320,000, which is the equivalent in 2025 to $5.2 million.
$5.2 million, goddamn.
Due to bad legal advice, he was unable to claim the loss on his taxes. It took him many years to pay the debt.
Crazy.
It says he wanted to move it to London, but British trade union rules forbid the elaborate props and sets because they were built for America, and so they had to be destroyed. It was too expensive for him to reconstruct it, and so never again did it receive full-scale staging.
Oh, that sucks. Poor planning, Mr. Wells. You said that, and that ended in September of 46.
Did I? I don't remember.
Is that what you said?
August.
August 3rd.
August. Holy crap. So this movie started shooting October 2nd of this of that year.
Yeah. Okay, so maybe he was still trying to save it at that point.
Yeah, and it really only ran for like 2 months, basically, in a couple days. So, yeah. Oof, rough. Did you say it was 60 performances, though?
75.
75. That's a lot of performances across 2 months.
Yeah.
Yeah, holy shit. He was like, run it again!
We got the elephants here.
How much these fucking elephants are costing me? I need asses in seats, okay?
Despite contrary beliefs, no, elephants don't actually work for peanuts.
Womp, womp, womp.
Oh, and I guess we need to mention Orson Welles and Rita Hayworth were married when they were making this movie and were really? Divorced.
By the end of it?
Yeah, before the movie was even released in theaters. Well, at least in U.S. theaters, because this didn't actually come out to 48 in the United States. I know it says 47 on IMDb, but that's for like some European country, probably France.
So you're saying this film broke them up, is what you're saying?
Actually, I think they were already going through divorce, and Rita Hayworth, she actually pushed to get the lead role of this because Orson Welles didn't actually want her.
Oh, she's like, oh, really? You know what?
Yeah.
Well, because I thought as soon as I saw that she had to cut her hair and bleach it for this role, I was like, no, they have to be madly in love then because I wouldn't do that for my ex-husband.
Well, she was using she wanted to use this as a way for them to get back together and be closer together. She had it put in her contract that he was actually going to have to stay at her house while they were filming because they were living at two different addresses at the time. So
I mean, he was busy with that crazy play. So, all right.
She's like, I can't go on this journey around the world with you. Okay. Like,
I need you to remember where your home is.
He's building a fucking hot air balloon in the backyard.
And she's sitting at home with her like newborn baby. I'm sure she was. Yeah. Get your ass home. But I mean, I'll be honest. This is this movie and Gilda are the only two Rita Hayworth movies I've seen from start to finish. I've just seen bits and pieces of stuff, and I've seen her dancing with Fred Astaire a lot.
I think I've seen clips of that, and the only other film I've seen her in is The Shawshank Redemption.
I mean, that's just her pinup picture, but sure.
It's a very memorable scene, yes.
Oh, and that pinup was supposed to be like taped to one of the nuclear bombs that they were testing in the Bikini Atoll. And that Rita Hayworth found out about that. And they found out, well, this is rumored now that we don't know this to be true, right? They named one of their atomic devices, they named it Gilda after her. And she found out and got really pissed. And that's one of the reasons that... Well, it's believed that's one of the reasons that George in this movie keeps bringing up the A-bomb. And he's like, I got to fake my death because cities are going to start blowing up any second. They're going to start dropping the bombs.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know if any of that shit's true, including whether Rita Hayworth or, you know, the bomb was named Gilda. I don't know if any of that shit is true, but it is urban legend. Is it trailer time?
It is. You're feeling it.
Your husband can take care of himself.
Nice night for it, ain't it, Mr. O'Hara? You didn't answer me, Mr. O'Hara. You ought to speak when you're spoken to. I'd hate to have to report you to the lady's husband. I said it's a nice night for it.
Hey, Mike, if you'll pardon me this intrusion, there's a couple of police officers out here.
Cops.
I don't speak their language, see? And they wants me to identify this guy. What's the Spanish for drunken bum?
Mrs. Bannister, can you think of any reason why your husband would want to hire a divorce detective other than to watch you?
I object!
As a matter of fact, you and Michael O'Hara have kissed each other, haven't you? To name one occasion, you were seen in the aquarium of this city kissing each other. Do you deny that?
No.
No further questions.
Come see this movie. Orson Welles smacks women. Like, is that what... And I think he hit her more in the trailer than he did in the movie.
Yeah,
I think
he did.
In the movie, it's a quick little like thing. Like, holy fuck!
You know, when women get hysterical, you just got to smack the shit out of them multiple times. Backhand,
God
front
damn
hand.
It, lady, you're hysterical.
Fucking shit! Are you trying to kiss me? You trying to get fresh here?
How dare you, lady?
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. It was a different time.
It was. It definitely was. There are some things in this movie, though, you know, watching this film, when you first put it in, the very beginning, this is very standard, not like Orson Welles, his movies usually are. The big blocking, the big camera shots, they're not really here. The acting is a little stiff in some parts, but there are some moments where the movie does find its groove and is absolutely brilliant. They are very few and far between. But outside the Hall of Mirrors, when Mike O'Hara and Orson Welles and the guys playing George, when they're sitting in I guess it's George's study or his office. It's his office, right? When he's going to go sign the confession. That is outside of the very first shot. That's all done in one shot and is beautifully blocked. And it's amazing. And you're like, oh, here goes the guy that made Citizen Kane and the Magnificent Ambersons. This is it. It's right here. What the fuck happened to the rest of this movie? I know this movie got taken from me, but like, did they just chop it to shit? They cut it completely down and just make it cut?
I think that's what I read. Yeah, that's what they did.
I'd like to think that he did do all these like long oners, you know, these long scenes, and they just probably went in and just cut half of it out every time.
Yeah, it's a shame. I mean, and there are moments that are just like absolutely like brilliant. Like that aquarium scene is also brilliant.
Oh yeah, I loved that scene. Also, did the fish seem like extra large to anyone else?
Dude, that turtle is the most massive ass turtle. And also, it would be so fucked up if you were to put a turtle that big.
I know.
He's like,
I was trying
like,
to decide. I was like, do we still have it, like fish that big, or do we just stop putting them in aquariums?
I don't know. I couldn't tell if that was rear projection or if those were matted. Yeah. Yeah, I couldn't tell.
I think it was a blend of both techniques, but also they were freakishly large and not real. Very, very strange. But also very effective and works.
Oh, it works great. Yeah, I was just a little distracted by how large they were.
Yeah, it's a little goofy. I do kind of like it, though, in a weird way, because it adds to the dreamlike quality of the scene where it's just like... Wait, this girl just all of a sudden is now, like, loving this guy and throwing herself at him. And just a scene ago, she was like, no, what are we going to do? Just live off $5,000? I'm a woman. I need more than that. And she just kind of goes with her husband.
That's
and
correct.
Now she's just like, she's like, oh, we could go away, do whatever.
She's probably saying this to inspire him to, like, don't get, just because it's $5,000, don't get lazy.
Well, I did the conversion on that, and that's $67,000 today. So is
See,
it worth...
that's not enough to live on.
Is it worth $67,000 to, quote-unquote, kill someone? And then,
it's
a starting... Oh. God damn it, Kristen, it's starting. It's our nest egg. It's what we're going to run off, and we're going to start with $67,000.
No, look, I think that's a lot of money to kill someone, because wasn't there some very famous case where someone... Was this like the Tiger King guy, whatever? Wasn't there
like
someone?
$3,000.
Yeah, it was like, it was less than 10 grand, less than 20
yeah,
grand.
Yeah.
What,
for real? Yeah, it was like $3,000 or $5,000, somewhere in there.
It was not
yeah.
much.
Yeah, it was totally, yeah.
Damn, these assassins and hitmen need to unionize
pay
or something.
Off my Amazon
to be
card.
Fair, it I don't, wasn't it botched or something? Like they didn't, no one died actually, right? I don't remember the story.
Are you talking about Tiger King or this?
Tiger King. Well, this was obviously botched, but...
apparently Carol Baskin killed her husband, but that's the only death.
But she wasn't paid for that. I mean, that was just also...
No.
That was
no,
pro
no.
bono.
No, the Tiger King feller. What is his name? I can't remember his name. Anyways, he tried to pay someone to kill Carol Baskin.
That but she's still alive. Yeah, yeah, it was failed. Yeah, yeah, so maybe like, you need to.
She went on to do Dancing with the Stars. Grand. So yeah, she's really she's great. Yeah,
that's crazy. Yeah, so you should. I think like 3 to 5K is a little low. 67K seems too high. I don't know.
I don't know. Like that seems about right. You know,
67.
Yeah, 67. But
yeah, I don't know, man. $5,000. Yeah, I don't know.
When you say it as $5,000, but you know, back then it spends a lot. You know,
even 67,000. I mean, whatever. No,
it doesn't spend that much. Let's be real.
Especially when you have to admit that you killed somebody. You're coming out and you're like, look, yeah, I accidentally pulled a gun out and it went off and it killed him and I panicked and threw his body in the Everglades and you know or wherever, you know.
To be fair, that does happen, but you usually have to come for money to get away with that.
Right.
But I don't know. The whole thing's ridiculous if fucking Orson Welles' character just stops for 1 second and thinks about this shit.
Well, hold on, because I looked it up, because there were laws at the time. If you didn't have the body at the time, then there was no crime and you couldn't be charged. Like, that's a real law that was on the books at the time.
I know, but it just seems
to
me like...
You
gotta feed
them to pigs, bro, and then you're scot-free. Them's the rules.
It just seems to me like you're just setting yourself up for... It's just bad. How is this ever gonna go good? Like, think for 2 seconds, brother!
No, but it could go well, because... If there's no body because the dude's still alive, yeah.
But he's got a signed confession that says, hey, I went and buried him here, like out in a swamp or something. Like, are you going to be able to find it? And if you have a confession, like, I don't know. It just seems to me like you could be doing some jail time. Yeah, like first degree murder or murder two. I don't know.
No, he's supposed to chunk him in the water in a certain area where, you know, he gets pulled out to, you know. It's kind of the Dexter thing. You're going to pull it out into the ocean, into the deep part, you know, where you can't find it.
Yeah, this just doesn't sound like this, you know, was ever going to go well. Even if somebody wasn't framing him and double-crossing him. And I did like on the second viewing that you see Grigsby and what's the other guy's name? Brom, the bodyguard guy. You see both of those people when in the very opening scene when they're returning... what's her name to her car? Rita Hayworth's character. Why am I blinking on her name?
Elsa.
Elsa. There we go. Oh, it's because he caught a Rosalind. And I was like, what the fuck? Yeah, that's right. My Russian princess. I'm just going to call you Rosaline.
Lover.
I don't know your name. I'm just going to make up a name for you, and I'm going to call you that. You're fine with it, right? Sure, it's Russian. I know you're not Russian, but you know.
Is the guy that played Arthur the guy that plays Igor?
Igor? No, it's the dude from plays what's his name in Citizen Kane, Bernstein or whatever the hell.
Oh, Mr. Bernstein. Yeah, you're right. It's just the way he like leans his head down. It kind of looks like what's the Igor character with Gene Wilder?
Young Frankenstein.
Young Frankenstein.
I'm
looks
pretty
like that
sure
character.
He was dead by that point.
He would have to be, but he has
yeah, he died in 1965. He was definitely dead.
Yeah, but like I was like, holy shit, this guy could be that guy.
It's pronounced Frankenstein. You're putting me on.
Anything noticeable in the costume world with this film, Kristen?
Well, I mean, specific to the bikini. But let's talk about the bikini.
Brian throws a little...
What were your favorite outfits in this?
Obviously the bikini.
all the swimwear was great. What are we talking about?
Oh, that's actually a good question. I actually, of course, loved the costuming in this. And I could go through and talk about a couple of the different outfits. But what I thought was super interesting was the costume designer is Jean-Louis from... he's a French-American designer. He also designed the dress that Marilyn Monroe wore when she sang Happy Birthday to...
Oh, really? The white one?
No, the nude one that had all the diamonds on it.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to decide if she also designed the white one because... it's described very confusingly, so I'm unsure. But he definitely designed the one that was just, it looked like she was nude and just wearing diamonds.
That recently just went up on the auction block and someone bought it, I saw.
Again? The last time it was sold was in 2016. Was it up again?
Yeah, I think so. Or maybe okay. I was just watching an old video. But yeah,
very I don't know. In 2016, it was sold for $4.8 million.
Incredible. But yeah, I was just actually just trying to flip through to see what the bikini actually looks like. Is it the scene where like dude's spying on her through the telescope?
That's the one I like. That's more of a one piece though.
Yeah,
I do like that one a lot because that's got like this weird spaghetti strap that goes over one shoulder.
I know you and spaghetti straps.
Yeah, bro, it's fucking hot. But I like the bikini where it's the one where it's that really cool symbolic moment where she asks for a cigarette. And then she hands one to George, and he's like, "I don't got a match."
Oh, is it the top down shot where it like you know it
she's
travels
like
reclined. Over to her?
Yeah, she starts singing that song.
Yeah,
would that be considered a bikini though?
I don't.
It's in the trailer.
I don't know.
I'm trying
to
remember
it?
What it looks like. Yeah,
it's got the top part that's like a brassiere.
I think it's. I'm. And I is think it just it's pants? Shorts. It's shorts.
That doesn't count as a bikini.
No.
I think for the time, no, it doesn't. she's wearing shorts and a top.
All right. Okay. I don't know my terminology for my proper swimwear, but.
No, but I mean, like, it does look like a bikini. It's shot that way to do that. I also thought it was the bikini until I looked at photos. But her actual swimsuit is one piece with the spaghetti strap.
I love that one. I also love just we see her with through that binocular or I don't know whatever that monocle
telescope.
There we go,
kind of looking thing. Yeah,
yeah. You see her reflection and like yeah, I think that's great. That's a great introduction to her, like laying out on that rock and then like diving from the rocks into the ocean. And oh man, all of that looks so incredible. She just looks so good.
And that plays really well when you realize that dude's, like, you know, spying on them and all that. I like that a lot. It's good stuff. Flipping through these production stills, I saw the shot of the slide that he, like, goes down. Those sets that they built for that, like, funhouse had to be insane. It makes me wonder what else that they didn't have, because him going down that slide and then falling down onto, like, all these, like, revolving floors and things. I was like, holy shit. Imagine if there was a funhouse like that you could actually, I mean, like, you could get in here and get fucked up. If you happen to, like, slide off the side of that slide, you just fall out into the abyss? Or what's happening there, you know?
I know. I mean, imagine, like, if you didn't sue anyone, if you couldn't sue anyone.
Yeah. Yeah, this is the way it was back then. You may not make it out on the other side.
Wait, you don't know how to go down slides? What are you? What's going on? Wait, you don't know
no,
how to
that
slide?
That was a weird slide. You saw him. He's got his legs all up. He's like, oh, fuck.
He actually, Orson Welles actually stayed after shooting and actually made all those sets himself and painted them himself.
Really?
Yeah. The production designer.
Now, is it because he is like very attentive to detail, or was he avoiding Rita Hayworth?
Probably a little bit of both.
Look, I can't be around her right now. I'm gonna sit over and paint this slide.
But he did like to paint. I don't think he thought himself very very good at it. But he did enjoy doing it.
He's like, someone's got to do it.
But you're right. He probably was avoiding Rita Hayworth. He's like, I'm not funny. Going fucking home to that wife and kid. Fuck, God. I'm going to sit here and paint my set some more.
And you know, he's doing that instead of like, you know, so yeah, and I'll call. We wrapped 2 hours late today. Yeah, sorry.
No, probably worse. He's like, oh, we wrapped, but everyone else had to go home because of like labor laws. So I had to stay late.
Always the martyr, Orson. Always the martyr. Did anyone else think that the lawyer looked a little bit like Edward Norton? That didn't pop into your head at all.
The lawyer? Which one? George?
Well, he's credited as Carl Frank. It's in the, you know, he's the...
Oh, you're talking about the district attorney? The prosecutor?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just a random thing. If you ever, next time you look at him, I get a little bit of Edward Norton out of him. Not the way he sounds, but just the way he looks.
No, I wasn't thinking that.
Oh, actually, I can see it in the eyes.
I just sent a link there. But yeah, it's totally in the eyes.
I can see it.
Yeah.
But I didn't get that when I was watching it, no.
My favorite wardrobe thing would be all of Orson Welles' hats. He has a cool collection of silly hats that he wears. That he's quick to take off. He'll start a scene with one, and then he'll pull it off real quick.
Yeah, it's probably the most interesting thing about his character.
Is his collection of hats?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's one of the things that gets him thrown in jail, because Grigsby had his hat. One of many things. But, yeah, the signed confession didn't help.
Yeah, smearing blood all over you and, you know. Here, let's rub that in the car a little bit, you know.
I forget where it is, where they are in Mexico, but it's where Rita Hayworth actually meets up with Orson Welles, and they actually have that dance, and the bodyguard finds him, and he slugs him. Whatever that white dress, it's very bizarre that Rita Hayworth's wearing. It's kind of like a, I don't know, it's got like a...
Is that the low angle, like, spinning shot that they're doing? Is it that scene?
It's the only scene in the movie where they're dancing together.
So it had to be that. Yeah, they're doing this really weird, like, you know, like, revolving, kind of spinning, like, low-angle shot on them. There, yeah, it's cool.
I don't remember it spinning. Maybe it did
a little. Like, the way they're moving, but it's tracking with them, and it seems very circular.
Yeah, I was looking for moments where the camera was doing cool stuff, and it really wasn't. A lot of the times, I was getting hung up with the framing in this movie, where the master shots or the two shots have all this fucking headroom. Like, people's head starts at the middle of the frame and their face is like kind of almost in the lower third. And then when they go in close-ups, their fucking heads are cut off. And I'm like, what the fuck? Why are they doing this?
Well, those are, again, two different people. Two different... One's Orson Welles and one's... I heard that Orson Welles did most of it like in wide shots. And so all the wide shots are him, and then everything else is the studio.
Yeah, you can tell when they're going to studio. That's when they have the rear projection on them and those close-ups.
But, I mean, that's why they don't match. I don't think Orson Welles had a big hand in the rest of it.
Yeah, it's just so bizarre. Like, even just having the framing of, like, the wide shot with all of that headroom, it's just like, why? What are we saying with that? What is that supposed to entail? Because the camera's at eye level or like just a tad bit above, and it's shooting directly at him with all of this headroom.
You know, I'm looking at stills. You're exactly right. He does this a lot in this. It's not, the head isn't necessarily right in the center of the frame. It's just one click up. So it's just under the third. It's kind of like if you were taking the third of the frame and putting their headroom right under that. And he does that a lot in this.
Yeah, it's so bizarre.
That was a stylistic choice by him. I mean, whether it works or not is a different question. The studio obviously hated it, but...
I don't really know what it's trying to communicate. Like, I get the low-angle stuff and the high-angle. And it's so bizarre, too, because, like in the scene where he's trying to get him to sign the confession, the headroom there is, like, perfect. And it's all... That's all one big, long dolly shot, and it's just flowing. And we're getting... just with characters' movements, we're going from low angle to high angle to over the shoulders, and it's a beautiful shot. It's some of the best blocking Orson Welles has done, and it's just really in that scene.
I don't know. I kind of enjoyed all of it. I feel like it's sort of, the whole thing is about escape and freedom and probably a nod to Around the World in 80 Days in the Hot Air Balloon and having all of this headroom, all of the sky, because they're traveling on the boat most of the time, right?
Yeah.
I think it kind of signifies that they are these like little peons. They're not, nothing they're doing is important, which I think also kind of ties in, like, no one has any sense of urgency in this movie.
It's interesting, like me. I've been flipping through these stills from the movie. It may just be the square aspect ratio. Instead of doing like negative space to the left and right like we do in our wider aspect ratios, he's doing it at the top of the frame. Because everything's very consistent.
Why?
He's doing this very interesting... It's just like showing more of the ceiling and, you know, the sky and things and all
this. It's not really showing the ceiling, though. It's just showing, like, the top of the...
The top of the wall there. Yeah, yeah. I know. But it's consistent. It's a choice, motherfucker.
I know.
It's
I know it's a choice, but what is it
it's
saying?
Like watching,
why is it there?
It's like watching, like, Mr. Robot. You know, they're doing these unconventional weird framings because it's just different.
Yeah. Why
he's
is
like, if
here?
I have to make this movie to make my fucking play, I'm going to, like... I'm going to play, motherfucker. You know, I'm going to do some weird shit.
Yeah, I think he was just experimenting.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess, I don't know. It's bizarre. Like, I can see how he was experimenting toward the end of the movie with the Hall of Mirrors, right? In the crazy house. And that makes sense to me. But this doesn't
and him just
make
letting
any
her
sense.
Bleed out and walking off into the sunset, which is...
He had to be free from her evil curse, bro.
But she's like screaming, but she's like, I don't want to die. I was like, holy fuck. He doesn't even like, he's like, all right. He's like sad Hulk at the end of that Hulk series, like, you know, just walking off with the music. It's like, all right, here we go. Let's go on to the next adventure.
I know. He's got a weird reaction shot when he's leaving through the exit gate. That's like a really weird high angle insert where he's got this bizarre looking face where he looks dumbfounded and confused as he's getting ready to go outside. It I don't know.
You think that's him like having a little bit of like struggle, like he should go back and try to help her?
Yeah. Because that's what he's even like at his VO, isn't it? When he's like walking away, is like he's like, I'm walking slowly to go get help. I know she's gonna be dead by that time, but I'll be yeah. broken of her evil spell by that point or something. Yeah, so he's like, I guess the only thing I could do is keep going on living. And it's just like, what? What? And eventually I'll forget about her. Dun, dun, dun. It's like, what the fuck? Sure, Orson Welles.
I think he was just trying to prove a point that I'm going to get a dark-ass ending out eventually and not have the studio come back and try to fight me to change it to make it happy.
I do like it, yeah. It's just a fucking convoluted plot, man.
Yeah.
I did definitely have to watch it a second time because I've seen this before. But I've only seen this movie recently. I watched it for the first time like 2 years ago when it came out on 4K disc. And maybe this was like my third time watching it ever. And when I got done watching for this podcast, I was just like, oh my God, wait, what the fuck happened in the beginning? How did this get set into motion?
Yeah.
I had to go back and rewatch the whole movie again, and it was just like, okay, all right, so we are setting up all these characters, and he is a Mark from the very beginning. Okay, all right, so this is here.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to watch it multiple times, but I did things where I would rewind and watch the scene again. You know, it took me about 2 hours to watch the movie because I would like just rewind and watch little bits again. Like, wait, exactly what happened here? Yeah, it's... I think it's just bad plot, bad story kind of stuff. But there's little glimmers here and there. You know, it's fine.
I don't know. I think it's really shitty editing.
Yeah, I think it's bad editing.
Yeah.
Well, but also, I mean, I went through and read the synopsis after I watched it the first time, and I had to go back and reread the synopsis several times to follow what it was saying.
I mean, yeah, once you see it, it's like, okay, it's not really... that difficult.
Right.
Yeah. But while you're watching it, it's like, wait a minute, what? He's going to kill this guy that wants to kill him, but I don't know. There's just all these things that come up into your brain. Like, I got to Google,
But why would you ever, why would that motherfucker ever trust anything that fucking creepy bastard would ever say? It seems like he is out to get him from the beginning. Like, just dead on. Like, this guy's got his number, and he's, like, you know, spying on him. And, like, you know, you're just like, all right, you can't trust anything this guy fucking says. But he's just like, all right.
Well, but even, too, when he goes to Elsa, and he's like, oh, like, he just proposed this idea. She's like, don't do it.
Yeah.
Which is weird, because, obviously, she needs him to be the fall guy. So it's like, I don't know, is this reverse psychology she's using on him?
Yeah, yeah, because she was totally acting like she was, you know, not in on it, obviously.
Yeah, all very confusing. And then it's like, I don't know, the guy never stops and thinks, like, how are you going to get this insurance money or collect it if you're dead? Like, he never stops and asks that question.
Wait, didn't he say he had a partner?
His partner's Arthur. Elsa's husband. So, like,
right.
Yeah. So if he goes and fakes his own death and I guess he's saying like his wife would get it, but then he doesn't really have a wife, but he's telling Orson Welles that. So I guess his either Arthur or his wife would get that insurance money, but then he would have to tell one of them that he's alive in order to get it. Like, how would he collect that if they think he's dead? Doesn't make any sense. It's like, this guy is really dumb. And thank God they put that, they make sure they put that in the VO. And it's like, I'm an idiot. Once I saw this woman, man, I just can't think straight, you know?
Yeah, man, every time I see her, dude, my mind just goes blank. I'm just like, all right, whatever.
That's a pretty girl right there. Yes, sir.
I'm going to have to save more than $5,000 to get her to leave, but we'll get there.
And I did think it was weird. He doesn't have a directed by credit. The credit was...
I saw that. It was like producing and writing or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Written and screenplay and production by. It was like...
Yeah.
I had to rewind it, and it's like, did he have his directing credit at the front? Nope. No directed. Nobody directed this movie.
Yeah.
Because he's, I think, like, that's fuck obvious. It. Yeah.
God damn, Kristen.
Dude, yeah. Classic Kristen.
Perfect. Well, you know, he only directed, like, what? No, he directed the whole thing. He just obviously did not cut a single frame.
Well, it's like the composer from the last film. Take my fucking name off of it, because it's not the film that I composed.
And I do really like the shark monologue.
Hey, and it pays sharks. Off. Yeah, that's good. I like that as well.
Second best shark monologue of all time, after the Quint Jaws monologue.
Well, are we at ratings, everybody? Have we exhausted our notes?
Man, the only other tidbit I have that's kind of interesting is the yacht actually belonged to Errol Flynn. That was Errol Flynn's yacht. And
that's cool.
Yeah. Apparently, in between filming, he would take said yacht out after drinking and may or may not come back on time for the next day's shoot.
They're like, oh, fuck.
So Orson Welles may have added a couple shoot days to this. Not Orson Welles, Errol Flynn. Which, that fits with that guy.
I think it's funny that that he was still active on the boat. You know, it's not like the production didn't just have it for the time. He's like, oh, fuck no. At night, this boat's mine.
This is why we now have those rules where you must surrender.
yeah, no shit. Like, wait. We got to pull all the gear off this motherfucker every day? God damn.
Yeah, that's it. I don't have anything else.
Well, who's going to start? Because it's not going to be me.
Kristen, you want to go first?
It's a hard one.
I guess I can.
You don't have to.
Okay.
Then you go, Brian.
I thought she said, okay, like, I'm going to go.
Oh, no,
go.
That was her relinquishing command. Brian, you have the con.
I think I'm going to come in at a 7.5 or an 8. I really like the movie. The movie's good. I really enjoy watching it. It does feel like a lesser Hitchcock outing, though. It's not quite 100% there, but unlike some of other Hitchcock movies, though, the end is really where this thing gets good. The first 40 minutes has a couple of moments, but man, it's kind of shot like a doo-doo studio movie where we're just cutting. And some of the blocking is really terrible, like that stagecoach where the camera's like going back up and forth between Rita Hayworth down in the coach and Orson Welles driving it up atop, and just like, what the fuck are you, what is happening now right now? This is some amateur bullshit student movie crap. What the fuck is happening, Orson Welles? What, this is not your first movie. But then you get to these other moments in the film, and they just really sing, and it gets really good. And I mean, I guess we really haven't talked about the courtroom, but the courtroom stuff is really good. And I like the comedy there, with the jury, like interrupting and sneezing. And there's this one guy that just bust out laughing for some reason. No explanation, really.
I thought there was a joke. I just didn't get there. Yeah.
I guess it was like an inside joke, because he was telling some lady something. And it's just like, what is happening? These people are all insane in this courtroom. And I even like the him going from the chessboard to the overhead shot of the courtroom. Yeah. Suggesting it's just a game. All of this is really well done. It gets really interesting. But then, you know, again, there's like just random Asian people that show up at the end of the movie. And you're just like, who the fuck are these motherfuckers? I know the title is Lady from Shanghai, but are all her servants just in San Francisco Asian? And they're all, Latino people in the South American countries. And we have the black lady on the boat. Like, what the fuck? We're just covering different races in different spots of our rich people life. This makes no sense. Yeah, there's things like that. So it was taken from him, but it is really interesting, and it's an enjoyable watch regardless. But man, you do have to get through that first 20 minutes of movie, which is, maybe it's the first 40 minutes. I don't know. The beginning is super fucking rough, but once it finds its footing, it's enjoyable.
I will say that they pack a lot in the runtime. The runtime is actually not that long, but it feels a little long. And I will say that I was a little scared at the beginning because holy shit. Like I said, the not only did the ADR and like you're saying, just that whole carriage scene just feels off. It's a little shocking. But by the time that we get into the fight, and like really, like you're saying, once the movie kind of gets its pace and gets going, it definitely gets better. Not the best Orson Welles movie I've seen. I'm glad we watched it. I'm always just so shocked with how he pulls off these shots. Like I don't know, like what you realize when you see these movies. There's so much technological shit for the day happening just to pull off these certain things with all the rear projection and all the things just to make the image. It's not a special effects shot the way we think of it today because it has like CG or something in it. It's just to create the actual look. Which is really cool. And that's actually the best thing I'm loving with Orson Welles. We've talked it to death. It's not the best. It's okay. It's got its moments. It's all right. It's an 8. I'll give it an 8.
It's an 8. All right. I agree with a lot of what you guys said. I think I could deal with the very beginning, and then it really starts to drag and gets pretty confusing. And yes, it picks back up towards the end, which I don't know if that's enough to save it. There are some beautiful things in this movie, including the costumes, which I don't have any complaints about at all. Some of the other things are bizarre, and I wonder if there was more to it. I would have loved to have seen some sort of original cut. I do wonder if that's really the issue, is that this movie was just completely chopped up. Yeah, that being said, it was chopped up though, so it's kind of tedious to get through. It's a short runtime, but it doesn't feel short when you're watching it.
It's true.
So it drags. I mean, that's the unfortunate thing, is that it just drags. And then when it finally starts to pick back up and to get, you know, really interesting again, you're just like, wait, what's happening? I don't understand what's happening here. Maybe you're not supposed to. Anyway, I'm going to give it a 6. I would recommend it if you're interested, but I wouldn't necessarily go out of your way to see this. Yeah, it's fine. It's good. It's good. It's interesting. It has moments. That's all.
Well, after that review, energetic and inventive, The Lady from Shanghai overcomes its script deficiencies with some of Orson Welles' most brilliantly conceived set pieces. You say you don't?
I don't. I don't think these are the most brilliantly conceived set pieces. Like, what the fuck are they talking about?
No, it's that slide, bro. That slide was killer.
All right, yeah. Crazy house was crazy.
It was so crazy, bro. Rotten Tomatoes brings in The Lady from Shanghai with a 86% tomato meter and an 84% popcorn meter with over 5,000 user ratings. It's not bad.
Chris, like the movie we did last week, The Magnificent Ambersons, that was also taken from Orson Welles and cut to shit and has pretty much the same runtime as this movie, but is a million times better than this.
It's just a so much better film.
I needed to. I haven't watched it yet, but I really wanted to. It's on my list. Maybe I'll get to it this week.
Yeah, like that one got nominated for Best Picture, and I do think there's this thing that like that kind of fucked Orson Welles up, where he was just like, man, hey, the studio took it, and I got a Best Picture nomination last time. You know, like, you know, well, let's see where the chips fall. I don't know. It could happen again.
It could. And with that, you've been listening to the Movie Crew Podcast. You can follow us on Instagram and X at Movie Crew Pod. If you want to reach out and say hello, you can always drop us an email at moviecrewpod@gmail.com. And like with all other podcasts that you're listening to, feel free to leave us a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. It really helps other people like you find the podcast. Brian, where can our listeners follow you, sir?
I'm on X at Elkins Edits.
Kristen?
You can find me on Instagram at Kristen Magdalene. That's Kristen with a K and an I.
And you can follow me on Instagram at Check the Gate or on TikTok at Jared B. Callen. Join us next week where we wrap up our Orson Welles month with, I don't know, what are we doing, Brian?
This wraps us out. We're done.
Oh, I thought we had one more.
Nope, we're finished. This is going to be the end of July. I'm hoping. Right?
I think we could squeeze one more in, but probably join us next week where we might talk about the Odyssey. I don't know. We'll see.
Actually, does this put us... No, okay, yeah, because this comes out on the 30th. Yeah, this is our last one. Yeah, yeah. August is... Are we finally going to do Swords and Sandals?
I think we have to talk about the Odyssey because it's a little disappointing and also kind of cool in places.
Fuck you. Fuck you.
No, fuck you, Brian.
Fuck you,
no,
disappointing.
No, fuck you. No, yeah,
what
yeah.
the fuck? You're an yeah. ass face, bro. What did you see this summer that was better?
That doesn't make it a good film, though.
It doesn't make it a good film. The script is pretty... anyways,
the script is fine. What are you talking about? People complaining about Homer? Read Homer!
Sounds like we have some homework. Anyways, homework.
I'm stopping this shit.
Stop this bullshit.